Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. And I'm joined once again by the one and only Justice Mosqueda. You can find him on Twitter at JUMOSQ. Of course, you can find him on acmepackingcompany.com. Justice, great to have you back. How the heck are you?
I'm doing great. 2-0 under Malik Willis. Definitely taking that to the bank right now. So, yeah.
It is absurd. It is absolutely like I'm still a little bit beaming from it. I still don't fully grasp exactly what just happened these past 2 weeks. It doesn't feel totally real, but I am very pleased. And yeah, I will take pleased and perplexed, but what a job that this coaching staff, GM by Brian Gutekunst, picking him up for a 7th round pick, Malik Willis himself, the team around him, man, I just have a lot of faith that this team is going to go and compete no matter almost what the circumstances are from now on. It's just crazy.
Yeah. I mean, just looking at how sports books deal with this stuff, right? I mean, they don't really care about anything other than who's your quarterback, and who's your quarterback is worth about 7 points. And
yep.
When you look at the difference between, you know, what the early lines were when Love was expected to be in the game versus, you know, now with Malik, it's about a 7-point difference. So they're giving Jordan Love kind of that maximum, or at least the difference between Love and Willis, about the maximum that they can give. And he's proven everyone wrong 2 games in a row. So congrats to him. He's second in the NFL in passer rating. I think that's going to stand based off of how the first half of this Jaguars and Bills game has gone. Josh Allen is first. Nuts. I mean, no one would have guessed that.
No, certainly not I. A lot of people eating crow about Malik Willis after kind of going all in about how he's a horrible quarterback before he took his start in Green Bay. But again, I don't know how anyone really could have saw this coming. He had a pretty solid preseason against third and fourth stringers. That's all you had to kind of lean on from his body of work to be like, well, at least there's some semblance of hope that at least he looks good in that very small opportunity this past preseason. But man, to go out and perform at the way that he did, at the level that he did, I talked to Nagler earlier today and was just, you know, it's one thing in that first week against Indianapolis, you know, where Green Bay was able to run the ball as much as they did, and you kind of maybe pull one over on everyone, and you could really appreciate what Malik did in that game, but at the same time, you could kind of see all the smoke and mirrors, and you're like, all right, like that's still a really impressive job that he did, but I can see the magician pulling the levers and pulleys of everything on the back end. So it's like, it's cool, but I can kind of see what's going on here. And you knew that it wasn't going to be able to be the exact same against the Tennessee Titans. And sure enough, it wasn't. It was way better. And it was unbelievable. Like there are times we see 3rd and 14s, 3rd and 18s with Jay Love at quarterback or with, you know, whomever. And you're like, you know what? Let's live to see another down. And they're like, nope, we're going to rip this down the field to Romeo. We're going to rip this down the field to Christian. He's throwing slot fades to Christian Watson for completions. He's scrambling when needed. He's doing read options down the field for big gains and then scoring touchdowns off of it. It's like, there were a couple times in this game, Justice, where I'm like, this looks like a legitimate starting quarterback. And they're still, obviously, they're putting him in advantageous situations, but I cannot get over how impressive he was in the second week.
Yeah, he had to. I mean, they put a whole lot more on his plate, and I think that's obviously the right thing to do. You know, Tennessee had those two guys on the defensive interior that just gobble up pretty much everything, right?
Yeah.
Jeff Simmons is an all-pro type of guy, and then Sweat might be like 360 pounds right now.
Yep.
So everyone knew it was going to be hard to run against that interior, especially with Green Bay playing so much 11 personnel, right? So you just have those two guys on, you know, on the inside, and not a lot of help from, you know, anyone out of the backfield. Any sort of pulling action is kind of harder to do when you're in 11 than when you're in like 12 or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, I think you knew going into this game, like Malik's going to have to throw. He's going to have to drop back at least.
Yeah.
Like 25 times. And that's basically what we got in this game when you include the sacks and the scrambles, too. I think he had like 19 passes. So 25 sounds about right. And that's with them having the lead. I mean, imagine if they would have ever really been down in this game. So
right.
Definitely way more impressed with this game than the previous one. But this was going to be the kind of make or break game for Malik, right? I mean, I kind of expected we'd lose this one just because I just didn't – that game plan, like, they did a lot to have to win against Indianapolis,
yep. right?
And you couldn't run that back. And my whole thing was just like, how many more tricks do you have in your bag? And I the best trick is that, like, Malik is ready to operate this offense, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, the hell of a trick to get done in, like, less than a month. So, yeah, kudos to everyone.
It's unbelievable. It's literally unbelievable. And I agree with you. Like, there wasn't, like, this – oh, they were able to do this one thing in the game that is like, well, the Titans didn't see that coming or didn't know how to stop it. It was, to your point, it was a pretty standard offense. They couldn't run the ball up the middle. They got a little creative with some of the run stuff. They had him run a couple read options and things like that, but this was a pretty standard offense and he executed. I thought Matt did some really cool stuff. I thought the screen play was great. I thought the opening play with the fake toss and then getting Jaden, you know, into space there. And obviously you could tell like the Titans were probably, we talked about, you're not going to be able to run inside. You're going to have to run on the edges. I'm sure the Titans all week were like, they're going to try to run on the edges. What do you do the very first play? You fake a toss outside and then, you know, have Jaden escape on the other end. It was just a really fun game plan. But at the same token, this was a lot more of about the guys on the field executing what you asked them to do and not just like, again, pulling out a bunch of different unique run concepts.
Yeah. Cause I mean, you didn't really see as many blown assignments in the run game as the Eagles game. Right. That was the one that's like the most concerning, but yep. The Packers yards per carry was pretty, I know it ended up being decent. Like I think at the end of the game, the backs, it was like 3.5 yards per carry or something like that. It was not that high going into the fourth quarter. They kind of found themselves and were like, okay, we need to run that little pony personnel stretch bubble, you know, yep. with the two backs, and they just send one guy in motion. And they found a little bit of success doing that even on handoffs, which was nice. But before then, I mean, they were really struggling in the ground game, and it was just not being able to move that defensive interior back. And, you know, no shame on the Packers, you know, offensive interior, like – those Titans are giving a lot of people a lot of struggles right now. That's a lot of man that you're having to move. So,
yeah, it was almost to the point of stubbornness at times. It felt like early in the game where it's like, are you going to keep doing this? Because you're literally just running into a brick wall. And I get like, you still want to kind of
run action if you don't run. Right. So like, it's kind of a double-edged sword. Yeah. I mean, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't type of thing.
And to some point, you still want to kind of grind out this game and take, you know, away from the clock and kind of condense it because you don't know what type of game you're going to get into. Now, it turned out Malik threw the ball just fine, so you felt a lot more comfortable. It felt like they had the better opportunity to throw the ball than what Will Levis was doing. So they actually had way more opportunities, I think, in this one, way more avenues for success than I ever expected they would have had going in. But I thought they did the right game plan. Again, Matt deserves a ton of credit. Was there anything offensively outside of obviously just Malik doing some great stuff and, you know, Matt calling up a couple really nice plays. Was there anything else that kind of stood out to you? Anything they did different? Anything that was surprising? I know Emmanuel Wilson obviously had a great game. A lot of conversation around Rashid Walker and maybe some of the holding penalties, but anything else offensively that you wanted to chat about?
No, I mean, those are kind of my takeaways. Like the read option stuff was nice. It was cool seeing that in an NFL playbook. You don't see that for everyone. I don't know how many times we've seen, you know, arc with, you know, the basically like the personal protector, right? I don't know how many times we've ever seen that and that it actually get pulled in Green Bay.
I can't remember one.
Yeah, I mean, the penalties on the offensive line, like, enough. I'm ready to start benching players. So, like, this is getting absurd.
And Matt talked about that today too. It's costing them and they got to be better. He talked about technique. And I think that's it. I'm more of like, listen, I think these guys are going to be fine. I think they're settling into the season. I think they just got to make sure that they're again, playing with better technique. They're staying ready at all times for any sort of Josh Jacobs cutback that might come. I think they'll settle into it. I don't expect this to be a massive issue going forward, but I am with you that it does need to get fixed. You are putting yourself in some terrible down and distances. Thankfully, they got away with it the last couple of weeks with a backup quarterback somehow and it didn't end up costing them in any significant way, at least in the win-loss column. But I mean, 10 penalties first game, I think 6 in week 2, 10 this past week. They're trending towards about 9 per game right now. And there was that one where they had the punt return where LVN had the holding. And then I think they had like 2 early penalties on that drive too. And it's just like, they just kept, you know, shooting themselves in the foot, and you just can't survive that way in the NFL. It is a grind right now in the NFL as a whole to get points, unless you're Buffalo playing against Jacksonville, apparently. But outside of that, it's a grind to get points, and you cannot put yourself in disadvantageous situations like that.
No, and especially this upcoming game is one to avoid, right? I mean,
yes,
give Brian Flores, you know, obvious passing situations, that's hell, right? I mean, we've seen guys like Brock Purdy come up to him this season after the game and be like, your defense is crazy. I mean, all of the blitzes, all of the stunts, like, he's going to send the nickel. You never know when these guys are coming. The more you can get them playing on their heels and having to respect the run because you're not taking those 5-10-yard losses, the better. So, yeah, I mean, this week is going to be very odd, especially considering, you know, so it's the O-line penalties coupled with who knows what Jordan Love's mobility is going to be like. Plus, you're going against the last guy in the NFL that you want to play, you know, in terms of obvious passing situations. So hopefully they can stay on track this week.
They're going to need to. I'm excited to talk to you about that game because I want to pick your brain on a couple of different things. Before we get there, it's funny because the offense was awesome in this one, but I feel like there's almost less to break down in the fact that it was everything we saw on the field was kind of self-explanatory. Like, Willis played well. Emmanuel Wilson was really cool in this game and some of the stuff that he did. We saw some of the penalties by the O-line. The receivers were really blocking on the outside. Tucker Kraft continued to block really well, but like, a lot of it was just sort of evidenced in the actual, like, while you were watching the game. And as you kind of dug into it more, it's just like, yep, all right, kind of confirming everything I saw on the initial walkthrough. I thought kind of the defensive side of the ball was where a lot of more like the fun, interesting conversation kind of comes in. So let's talk about that. I want to talk to you first about this defensive front, because you were onto something very clearly early on. I know you were, about like, hey, I'm not sure like TJ Slayton fits in this defensive front. And, you know, let's see how Kenny fits in this front. And I know Preston Smith was one as well. I think Preston's been mostly okay. Obviously the offsides penalty was a brutal one this week, but TJ Slayton, what was it, down to like 15 snaps this week?
Actually, fourth most played defensive tackle 2 weeks in a row, despite getting the starts. So
15 snaps, Carl Brooks had 26. So Carl Brooks, 11 more than Slayton. Wyatt was at 29. Kenny was at 34. It definitely feels like he is defensive tackle number 4 right now, and he may not exactly fit this defense perfectly, as you were kind of onto. And then I'm curious your thoughts on the Kenny Clark experience so far through 3 weeks as well.
Yeah, I don't think Kenny's played his best ball, which is surprising because I would have thought he would have played better at this point. I wonder how much of the Kenny Clark stuff was like them telling Kenny, like, you're going to be able to play 3 technique in this defense. No, dude, he had to play nose tackle. He's 320 pounds. He's always going to have to play nose tackle. Sorry, Kenny. Like, it almost feels like, you know, like in the NBA, there's always the guy like, oh, I don't want to play center. Like, I'm just going to be a massive 4. It's like, go.
Good luck.
Bang some heads at the 5.
At 5, yeah.
Get real. Like, if we're going to be a contender, you have to go bang some heads at the 5. Kenny, you're going to have to play the nose. Sorry.
Are you a Portland Trailblazers fan? Because it feels like you got some DeAndre Ayton conversation going on right here.
Oh, man. Dude, I'm not even watching this team anymore. the Blazers are so bad, I cannot. I live maybe a mile from the Motor Center. To be fair, I only moved here in February. But they can't get me in that arena.
It's going to be a rough year. You're in the Cooper Flag conversation.
Oh, I know. I just need to know, like, who are the draft picks? I tune in on draft day.
And then
I'm
Cooper like, Flag. You're just fighting for Cooper Flag. That's all that can happen right now. That's all you want.
But so, yeah, I think that's kind of the situation maybe with Kenny. The same thing too. I know Goot, you know, when they asked, I think they asked him about the defensive line at some point. And he was like, the thing is, like, when you get small, you can get small in a hurry. Who cares? That's what this defensive line is. Like, everyone who runs this scheme well, you have to get small. You have to get pass rushers. That is everything. That is the whole game. The whole game is you're adding a body to the box. If you can't stop the run with an extra body in the box, you're screwed no matter what. But your pass rushers have to be good enough to help your secondary when they're playing all this cover one and cover three, which is sometimes, I mean, people in the first game were freaking out about Jair. And I'm like, Jair bit on a double move. Like, the pressure should have gotten home by then. Like, that's how this defense works. I mean, you can go back to the Seattle Seahawks when they were doing the Legion of Boom stuff. On pass rushing downs, Michael Bennett was
inside
270 pounds. Playing at three best, technique,
yeah.
Like, I'm not that worried.
Two of their better plays in this one. It wasn't the one where he got the immediate sack, but Kingsley was playing on the inside and got two immediate pressures from the inside. And that's, again, to your point, like, that's what it needs to be. I'm curious your thoughts. So you kind of have potentially two-ish square pegs in a round hole a little bit with Kenny and with TJ Slayton, but is there value on some of the early downs to still have a couple of guys like that, that can, if needed, you know, help you stop the run. Whereas, you know what, if they need to go with LVN, Kingsley and Igbari, Carl Brooks, Devontae Wyatt, and all these guys, like, we saw that they're not afraid to put Rashawn and Igbari, LVN and Preston Smith all on the field at the same time. They've done it two consecutive weeks now. And Carl Brooks and Devontae Wyatt are more of your, you know, two sort of, not undersized, they're the right size for this defense. I mean, Wyatt might even be bigger, but he's agile enough to get the job done, as was evidenced this week. And you've got a guy still in Colby Wooden that I think can do some of that stuff too, if you ever need him to. They had eight sacks this week. Is it still workable? And then they also have those guys to break glass in case of emergency when needed.
Well, I think the Slayton stuff is, like, you probably want to use him more when teams are in, like, 12 personnel, right?
Yep.
And you're like, oh, I know, you know, it's a 60% chance there's going to be a run instead of a 60% chance there's going to be a pass, right?
Yep.
So I think being smarter in that regard could definitely help them. The Kenny thing, I think Kenny's going to fit in fine at nose tackle. I just think it's going to take – you know, he just hasn't had great games so far. I'm not really worried about Kenny long term.
Yeah, I forget what podcast he was on before the start of the season. Do you remember he was talking? Oh, was it I don't know if it was Greg Olson or it was somebody he was talking to prior to the start of the season. And oh, it was Chris Long. Chris Long, I think it was, before the start of the season. Ben Fennell pointed this out, of how Kenny was very candid of how this is the first, like, they're asking him to do stuff that he hasn't done in a very long time, or maybe ever in this defense. I'd have to go back and watch it to get the exact verbiage, but I know he was very candid of, like, this is definitely different than it's been in the past for him. And I do just wonder if, like, he's obviously played the game a certain way for a very long time and has made his name doing that. And I'm sure there's probably an excitement for him kind of doing something different to begin with, but it does seem like maybe this is taking him a little bit of a moment to kind of get adjusted to the way that this defense is wanting him to play.
Could be. I mean, I know the Packers, even when they were in base or they were in penny and stuff, and Kenny was playing three technique, you're trying to slow play the entire formation, right? So if you're getting, you know, play action, you're, like, actually slowing down. Because if you're a defensive lineman, you're trying to hold up the offensive line so those safeties can be in the run fit, right? That's not an issue when you're playing single high. Just shoot your gap. You have your gap, right? Beat that block. I mean, that could be a thing. You mentioned the all the pass rushers on the field at the same time type of thing. That's an old Seahawks thing. Like the 3-by-1, right? Like, you would just get Rashawn Gary all by himself, and then you have a guy opposite of him on the line of scrimmage. You have a guy lined up in the A gap, B gap, C gap. And they'll run some sort of, like, twist game. So you can really only help one of those sides. So you're picking, am I going to help on Rashawn Gary, or I'm going to help on this three-man twist that I have no idea how these guys are going to sort out, you know, three steps into the play. It's a pretty tough thing for offenses, for sure.
Yeah, and I liked it. They're going to have success with that, I think, through the course of the year. I really like Devontae and LVN doing twists and stunts together, too. They seem to have a pretty good cohesiveness in how they're kind of going about it.
LVN's a really good hustle guy. Like,
yes. Just,
I mean, even when, what was it, like the zone read against Fields last season? It was LVN's first games, and he ends up picking up the sack on that. Like, if you need to chase down a quarterback leaving the pocket, like, he's going to get there.
Yep.
He's going to get there.
So. Yeah, you have a freak athlete that tries super hard and will not stop. Like, that's going to get you sacks through the course of the season. And I've actually been fine with the way overall the LVN has played so far. I think there's still a lot of nuance that he can add to his game, and it's going to take time for maybe some of that to develop. But to your point, you know, super freak athlete, working hard, hustling nonstop. And he's put a couple moves together here and there that have been at least slightly encouraging. But I don't actually mind at all the way that LVN has played so far.
I pulled this up, and I know there was someone in the comment section who was saying,
"Let's do it."
The sample size is too small, but and this was last week. This is edge rushers, okay? So this is pass rush rate versus the average. So the average pass rusher or edge rusher is getting a pressure on every 12% of pass rushing snaps, okay?
Okay.
The Packers pass rushers rank in terms of their value. So this is like versus that average, right? Rashawn Gary is 53rd. Okay. Preston Smith is 80th. Lucas Van Ness is 101st. And Kingsley and Ibarra is 108. And that's out of 111 players. Okay. Meanwhile, the interior defensive line, which you're only supposed to get pressure about like 7-8% of the time. Devontae White, 24th, Carl Brooks, 46th, Kenny Clark, 48th, and Slayton, 55th, and that's out of 127 guys. So right now, I know we got all those sacks and all that stuff, and we could talk about the context of some of those sacks.
Yep.
The interior defensive line is playing a lot better in the pass rushing game than the edge rushers are. I would like to remind everyone that right tackle who got benched in that game, and they were kind of beaten up pretty good, which is why he ended up getting benched. Like, coming into the game, he gave up the highest pressure rate of anyone in the NFL. The guy after him should be his backup. That guy was worse. And at that point, it seemed like Halfley was just like, well, let's just, you know, blitz and twist and, you know, cross this guy's face as many times as possible, because that guy shouldn't be on an NFL
field. Was it Duncan or Ojukwu? I didn't even see who came in. I know
it was Duncan. It was the kid out of Maryland. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there's a reason why there was a stretch during this game where Levis was just sitting back there patting the ball. Right. I mean, that did happen. I'm aware that happened. And also the 8 sacks happened. So it's kind of a weird thing where it's like, how much credit do we give the pass rush for that game? Because there was really like a tale of like 2.5 quarters and then like a quarter and a half. At the end of the game, they certainly were teeing off on Levis. But early on, it was not looking great.
Week 3 is officially in the books. Green Bay has moved to 2-1 on the season. Malik Willis has been beyond unbelievable. Jordan Love is making his way back, and all is right in the football world. Now we get set to head into Week 4. It's a huge division rivalry game, and it's another great opportunity to do some winning with Prize Picks. Now, we are wrapping up September, so you are running out of time to take advantage of the current promotion. One Caleb Williams passing yard gets you one win on Prize Picks every week in September. That's right, only 1 yard gets you an automatic win. And listen, it has not been pretty for Caleb Williams so far, but I still like the opportunity of Caleb Williams getting 1 yard this coming week. And of course, with Prize Picks, you can win 100 times your money with as little as 4 correct picks. And Prize Picks is the only real money daily fantasy platform with an injury insurance policy so that your lineups stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. If your player leaves the game in the first half and doesn't return, your picks stay alive. Now, I don't need to tell you that I'll be going with Caleb Williams again, but I'm also going to be going with Jaden Reed in Week 4. He's going to have a big game against this stellar Minnesota defense. But whoever you choose, the best part is that you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks for a first deposit match up to $100. So what are you waiting for? Pick more, pick less. It's that easy with Prize Picks. So I'll say this. I watched this pretty closely because I was watching Gary, because I know a lot of people are like, man, Rashawn Gary's not really doing anything. Like, what's going on? I actually thought he had a much better game than the box score would indicate in this one. But so I'm thinking back on this. So again, Week 1 and Week 2, we know that they did a lot of contain and making sure that they weren't allowing for the rushing lanes. And it worked really well against Anthony Richardson. hit and miss a lot more against Jalen Hurts, because Jalen Hurts was certainly winning with his arm a little bit more. But there was definitely a method to what they were trying to do. And I don't think they were trying to aggressively get after the quarterback as much. Not to mention, Philly has a phenomenal offensive line, especially when Mailata and Lane Johnson are in there. I think that definitely plays a part. I think Indy's O-line is it's not great, but I think it's good. I think those tackles are pretty decent. But I think a lot of that was, again, what they were trying to accomplish in that game. Then I go back and watch this one, and like especially until you got really until the fourth quarter, when we saw sort of the floodgates break and they were getting a ton of pressures, they got the ball out of Will Levis's hands really quick on a lot of different occasions. And when they didn't, it was a lot of play action max protect, where like everyone, like almost everyone on the line was getting doubled or chipped, or somebody was helping. And it was like a longer developing like corner route, which they had a lot of success on. I think they hit two of them. I think they looked for three of them at least. And it was a lot of that. So it was like every single time I was evaluating the pass rush, it was either like, oh, guy's getting doubled, or just as he's about to win, the ball is out of Levis's hands anyway. So I kind of looked at it as like, with the amount of opportunities that they had early in the game, first, second, third quarter, there weren't a ton of them. And then once they got them later, and Jeff, you know, dialed up a couple of unique blitzes as well, or timely blitzes, as Matt LaFleur called it today. I thought once they had a little bit more of the opportunity and Levis was holding it longer, then it was game over, and they got there with immediacy. But I can understand a little bit why those numbers might be a little bit skewed towards, hey, the pass rushers aren't doing well. I think if you kind of look at the context of it a little bit more, I'm less concerned about it, and I'm more interested to see kind of how it looks going forward.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because, again, I mean, that was a wonky game, right? I mean, Tennessee didn't have to pass. They weren't in obvious passing situations until, like, the very end, right?
Yep.
And by then, you have a backup tackle after, you know, you already know. The other right tackle was one of the worst in the league, so that guy wasn't going to be great. So I don't know if we have an answer there. I think people are going to be maybe frustrated next week because Minnesota has two great tackles too, right?
Yep.
So it's like we're a month into the season. We don't have a great data point on the pass rushers. It's just like that's just
– it's going to have to be the interior again, right? It's going to have to be Wyatt and Brooks and those guys on the interior. Again, some of those guys kicking inside. And
that's,
Kenny Clark
that's where there's a mismatch. I mean, I don't think the Vikings are good on the interior at all for as great as that tackle duo is. So
no, and Kenny Clark has owned Garrett Bradbury over the years. So hopefully that can be his sort of breakout moment and get him a little bit more confidence moving forward. I want to talk about the linebackers. I know you wrote about and talked about, we're starting to see a little bit more Edgerrin Cooper. We're starting to see a little bit less Isaiah McDuffie. That transition is happening. Still got about a 7-snap game from Eric Wilson, almost said Emmanuel Wilson, but Eric Wilson. We are seeing more Edgerrin Cooper though.
For sure. I mean, basically, Eric Wilson, Cooper, and McDuffie are being like evenly rotated at 4-3 outside linebacker, which again, a normal game versus normal rates of an NFL team in terms of like 12 personnel and stuff like that, you're expecting to play base about a third of the time, right? Yeah. And then in nickel is where we're seeing Cooper really start to rise up, where, you know, I think week one, he got one of those snaps. Week two, it was like 7 of those, and now he's up to a third of those, right? So it's like line keeps going up here, right? And McDuffie is getting fewer snaps, Cooper is getting more snaps. At some point, they're just going to pull the trigger and have Cooper be that guy. It seems like they really want him on the field. I don't necessarily blame him, or blame them. He's been playing well when he's been on the field, he's made a couple plays. I mean, the athleticism is clear, right?
Yep.
McDuffie, I think when I was looking at the next gen stats stuff, the NFL pro stuff, he's the only linebacker who's allowed multiple touchdowns in pass coverage. And then when you look at like his efficiency numbers, I think there were like 74 qualifiers and he was 73rd in the league. So he's one of the most costly guys in the league in terms of what he allows in coverage. A lot of that again is, you know, the touchdown to who was it?
Saquon
Vannett. It was Saquon week one, and then Vannett.
Vannett. Yeah.
This past week. But yeah, I mean, you can't look me in the eyes and tell me you think McDuffie is a good guy. You want him in coverage for your NFL team.
That's the thing. I actually like how McDuffie's been playing, but in coverage, it's clear that there is a liability.
I mean, That's fine.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's good. A role for McCarthy on
the team. Eric Wilson too. Like, if you want to have Cooper be the nickel guy and have those two be the outside backers, and you're really working with a linebacker group of four guys, do it. By all means, be my guest. Go for it.
It does feel like that. Like, in dime, it's Quay. And in nickel, it's Quay and Cooper. And in base, just go Quay, Wilson, and McDuffie. And that seems to be, again, if you want to put a couple, you know, a few McDuffie snaps in there every once in a while and nickel, fine, so be it. But, and maybe if you're playing like a bigger nickel, meaning it's like 12 personnel, but you want nickel defense on the field for somewhere, whatever it is, like if you want McDuffie out there still, whatever, but like, it does seem like
third and two and nickel, and you're like, I know inside run is coming.
Yes, throw McDuffie in there. Exactly.
There's a way to utilize it. Like, use Cooper as an outside linebacker to cover up a tight end or something. Like,
I will say this: if the thinking behind it right now is like, hey, we're still integrating Edgerrin, and we think like he can only handle 20 snaps right now from a, I don't want to say like mental capacity, but from just like where he's at with the playbook and everything, like, okay, bring him along at the speed that you feel like you need to bring him along at. But I agree with you. I think it's just a matter of when, not it. Like, it is going to happen at some point where he is the nickel linebacker. The sooner you can get him more on the field and you feel comfortable with it, the better. I mean, he stands out easily as a playmaker on defense. And again, it's not always going to be perfect. He's a rookie. I get that. But man, the speed he brings, the intensity he brings, the blitzing ability, I can only imagine once you get him spying the quarterback a little bit. We know he can get sideline to sideline. It is a different, unique linebacker type out there. And I'm excited to see more of it whenever that happens.
Yeah. So just, again, if you're not keeping track of like the snap counts weekly, like I am, because I'm a sicko, like, just, it's coming. It's coming for sure. Like, line
our, is our Monday post game, I do the snap counts right away. So we go over them and anything that's noteworthy. And there were a couple ones. The Slayton one was noteworthy. Obviously, Edgerrin Cooper getting a few more snaps in this one. I know everyone just kind of wants it to be now and bench everyone and put Cooper in there. I'm cool with it taking whatever natural progression that it needs. But I also would like to see a little bit more of Edgerrin. I don't think anyone's against that, at least that I know of at the moment. So we'll see how much he gets. What else? Xavier McKinney definitely earning his keep so far with the huge safety contract. The ROI has definitely been worth it. Three picks in three games, but I feel like he's playing really solid football even outside of the three interceptions.
Yeah, the NFL pro stuff, and it's all based off of nearest defender, which is maybe not the best way to do it, but at least they're consistent. Give you something. Yeah, at least they're consistent with that. When I was working with the XFL, I had access to like PFF Ultimate and stuff. And sometimes the charting is not so consistent. So I'd rather at this point have consistent and then be able to like watch the film myself. But they have Xavier McKinney with 0 yards allowed as a deep safety. And that's out of two high or single high this season, the three interceptions. If you do all the math on it and you do the adjusted yard stuff where, you know, you value an interception as a loss of 45 yards for the offense and all that, it ends up coming out with Xavier McKinney being the most valuable safety in football still, which he was coming into this week and only added on top of that. And there's only one safety, and it's Kirby Joseph. Of course, we've, you know, known about that one getting interceptions every once in a while. He's the only guy who's even like half as valuable as McKinney. So at this, like, might be an all pro, like probably a Pro Bowl, because, you know, Green Bay has a huge fan base, big free agency signing, right? All this success is happening early on in the season. So, you know, it's all happening before the Pro Bowl voting and all that. I assume that he's going to have a Pro Bowl year at this point, and he'd have to do some pretty real damage to his stats to not be considered there.
He's been everything as advertised. And it, you know, sometimes when you get some of these playmaking safeties, it's that a guy's taking a risk here or there. He's doing something maybe he shouldn't, or he's going big game hunting. And not with McKinney. Like, he is still playing ultra safe football. He is tackling well. You know, he's doing his job. And it's almost like what we saw out of Adrian Amos, but Adrian Amos was allergic to turnovers. Like, Adrian Amos was always in the right spot, always doing the right thing, you know, constantly making the tackle when he was needed. But just, I know he had the big interception against the Bears in one of his first game or one of his first games or whatever it was for that game. But outside of that, he just was allergic to making the big play. It's like you're getting that beautiful, safe safety that is going to give you everything you need whenever you need it. But he's also going to go and make the big play for you. And that is a huge differentiator and just a massive signing for Brian Gutekunst and company, and fits perfectly in this Jeff Hafley defense as we expected it to be. But sometimes expectations don't always seem to be reality. This has been expectations meeting reality.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I don't know how many times the Packers ran cover three where they were only sending four rushers last year.
Not a ton. Right?
I mean, yeah. I know Joe Barry, like if you look at it on paper, like the charting services will be like, yeah, they ran a ton of cover three, but it's all three up, three under, right? Yeah. It's all blitz coverage basically. And the fact that, you know, we're in a new scheme, a new front and, you know, new coverages, right? And we're not seeing any of these plays where you're like, how the hell did that guy get open? And, you know, the safety is looking like this to the cornerback and all that stuff. Like, I don't know, man. Like, that's a testament to the coaching that they did this summer.
I have a question for you, and maybe you don't know the answer. I'm definitely putting you on the spot here. I'm assuming you know the answer. It's always a tough one for me. Tennessee ran this. These are the corner plays that I'm talking about in the play action. Green Bay's in cover three. You've got, I think it's a sky cover three, or you're running the cornerback deep safety. And then they're running a wide receiver right up the seam and the corner staying with them. And it's a play action. So the linebacker's coming up and then staying in the flat. And then they're running a corner behind it. And for a couple of those plays, I think it was one of the first plays of the game. There's just nobody there for Green Bay's defense and you're getting easy completions. Is there something Green Bay can do differently? Is somebody blowing an assignment on that? Like, how do you see those plays happening? I don't know if you've had the opportunity to watch the All-22, and I know I'm putting you on the spot a little bit here, but that's what I'm seeing, where there's been a little bit of a gap, and Tennessee was clearly aware of it because they attacked it multiple times. But that was the one thing in this game where I'm like, all right, they need to figure out a way to kind of clean that up a little bit.
I mean, that should be a situation where, if I'm thinking about this right? So there's a guy going up the seam, and then there's a guy –
So guy on the outside is running a nine. So guy on the outside running a nine. The corner is running with them. The safety is there. They're in cover three. So corners are going back on the outsides. Then you have the middle high safety. And then it's the three linebackers basically that are going flat, curl, flat. And so then they're running the fake handoff. The running back is going into the flat. And it's usually, it was the tight end, I think, in both occasions that's running a corner behind it. So you're getting... the corner running up with the wide receiver, and then the safety's coming over the top of it, and then
let's break this down. Okay, yeah. So there, corner goes with the wide receiver.
Yep,
that's a nine route.
The corner
should be the flat guy, expanding with it.
Okay,
and then you said there's a seam.
No, there's the tight end is running the corner, the deep sideline route, like to the, sorry, not a post, but yeah, corner route.
Okay. Yeah. So the corner should be, so there's a corner and a flat.
Sorry. Yeah. So it's the linebacker is the one that's going into the flat.
Yeah. Yeah. The linebacker should be the one in the flat. That seems like it's just kind of a beater.
Honestly, a cover three beater. That's exactly how I viewed it. In both,
it's a beater both and off of action. That's kind of a tough thing to deal with.
Yep.
It's just like all right, you got us. Now, if we know when you're calling it, because you know when we're calling it, have fun with the slot blitz when your quarterback's head pops around next time. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, we'll play dice rolls.
That's exactly how I viewed it on both occasions too, is I'm like, I'm watching the corner and I'm like, corner's going with a nine. Like theoretically, like McKinney was playing it well enough. And I think both occasions where if the corner was wise enough to it, he probably could have fallen off of it and maybe made a play, but like he's supposed to go with the nine on that. And then like, that's his area of the field, at least in my understanding of it. And then the linebacker's playing run and then is going back and is coming up on the flat. And then you've just got that second level behind it where there's nobody there to kind of play it. And like, I just kind of viewed all of them as a tip your cap to the offensive coordinator.
Yeah. And you know, they can mix things up too, right? Cover one can look a whole lot like cover three pre-snap. And
yes,
once that thing gets covered and quarterbacks, oh crap, you know, I don't have a dump down because we just exhausted all these routes and now I'm off of play action. And
good luck.
What do I do? The offensive line just had to sell out to fake run. You know, it's not a normal pass protection play. Like those can go bad. And Levis took a couple on the chin at the end of the game.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. All the part of the beautiful chess game when it comes to those sort of things. All right, a couple other quick thoughts before we get out of here. Packers Vikings, what do you, I know you talked about the beauty of the Vikings defense and Brian Flores and what he's doing. What does Green Bay need to do to kind of mitigate some of that? Because I think that's going to be a really interesting matchup.
Yeah, man, stay on track. That's the biggest thing. Like, don't go for, you know, don't expect them to, you know, play action shot. Now, you know, if this happens, you know, I'll be eating crow, but don't expect them to, you know, play action shot first play of the game and, you know, try to get touchdowns all at once, right? This is going to be a grinded out game in a different kind of way because the defense kind of dictates certain things. You know, it's kind of interesting, right? It's like the opposite of the Titans where it's like, all right, we can't run, but we know we have to run. Just because this is what kind of the hand we're dealt with. Yep. Minnesota, it's like we really don't want to pass when they know that we're passing.
Gonna pass.
Right? So, yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to become predictable. Like we saw with the Texans last week, once it became predictable, it was hard enough for the Texans right away. And then once you become predictable against that defense, good luck.
And you know what Tunsil did? Whole lot of holding. I think he has like 10 penalties so far this season. Pro tip. Don't do that, left tackle. Please, Rashid. Like, this is not the week. This is not the week for, like, line up, like, right on the ball.
Yeah, don't know procedure penalties. No, yeah, like, we had was it Bo Melton with the illegal procedure, the illegal motion penalty this week? Like, no illegal motions, no illegal procedures, no false starts, no holdings. You do not want to be behind the eight ball.
Yeah, we're going to need him this week. We're going to need him to stay on track. And then again, the other thing too, just the pass rush versus those offensive tackles, because they're gonna pass that plenty in this game, I would assume. Darnold's not super mobile right now. I mean, he's dealing with the knee bruise and all that stuff. Let's see it. No excuses about the mobile quarterbacks this week, right? So it's gonna be good on good.
We know Flores loves his double A gap looks and he will run anything out of it. Like what's your counter? What I know, obviously, again, staying on track, but like, is there a part of you that wants to spread it out and say, well, cause if you go like five wide, do you think they can still do, I guess they could probably still do, double again, but I think it feels like it's a lot harder to kind of get into that look, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. I mean, they can just basically play like cover two and like do a bunch of bluff blitz stuff, or they could just man it. Right.
Yeah.
And I don't think they would man it just with Jordan Reed and Christian Watson. Like, there's just too much speed on the field with those two guys alone.
Yep.
No, I think you stay with the back in the formation. I mean, there's a lot of stuff you can do. Like, teams were doing it to McVay for a while, and McVay started doing the walk-up stuff. Packers do that too, where, you know, you just you have a running back in, like, the sniffer position, right?
Yep.
Which is, like, high school, college terminology, and it's sniffer because it's a butt sniffer. I mean, you imagine that, right? Like, he's in front of the quarterback.
Yep.
Right? And you're just adding him as like a potential A gap blocker or something like that. You could do some of the chip wing stuff. I don't know who that back would be for them right now. I mean, maybe that is Jacobs. I mean, Wilson has done a little bit more in pass protection in recent weeks.
Could you just put Tucker Kraft there? You're not play actioning anyway. If it's a sniffer position, like there's no play action. There's no threat of run. They're there to basically pick up any blitz and then go, like, leak out. Like, I don't know. It feels like maybe there could be.
Teams just like do not want to play without a running back or a tight end for some reason. I don't know if there's some like hard counter that happened like 10 years ago in the NFL that team started figuring out when teams started going like five wide or something like that. And they're like, no, you need a break in case of emergency running back or tight end because of this. But teams just don't like, I mean, the Packers don't, I mean, the Packers pretty much play 11 and 12, right?
Personnel. Yeah.
So it's either there's two tight ends in or one tight end in. Like, that's just kind of the whole game that they play. And there's always a running back on the field. But yeah, I mean, there's plenty of ways to counter it. It's just, you know, when they get you in those situations, you better be making the right decisions, because, you know, those linebackers can either, you know, sprint at the snap of the ball, or those guys can fly out and you're like, oh crap, it's cover two and I'm late. And now they have five defenders sitting on the low zones.
Yeah.
Oh God. Right. So it's always a don't blink type of situation. right? That's the whole game. It's just like, don't blink, be focused, stay on track. You got to kind of bring your A game to kind of beat that Flores-style defense when they have the horses that they do right now.
I'm excited to go back and watch Minnesota's tape from these last few weeks, especially on defense. And I'm excited to go back and watch LaFleur versus Flores from the second game last year, because I think Matt had some success against it, if I remember correctly. But I do think Minnesota's done a bit of a better job of finding some guys that fit that Flores defense better. I think Van Ginkel is an amazing fit at Grenard and Dallas Turner. And just think they've got a really good defense that's playing really well cohesively. All right, two quick ones really quick, and we'll get you out of here. One, anything catch you by surprise or any trends you're seeing throughout the league in week three this week?
Ooh, trends around the league.
Any justice nerdy things that you just want to get off your chest? And this is my opportunity. I'm giving you the floor to nerd out. That's what I'm trying to do here. So you go in any direction that you want.
There's the lead swing screen that everyone is running. Everyone runs it now, right? It's like the two back stuff. One guy's literally running a swing, and then the other guy's literally leading for him. And they're just putting that off of as like a super safe check down off of shot plays down the
field. With a blocker in front of it.
Yeah, exactly. So there's that. I guess the other thing I'm kind of like nerding out on is like just the field goal situation around the league right now. Kickers are getting really good.
Yep.
Some kickers are not keeping up with that, right? The talent gap has never been widening as quickly as it is right now in the league, where guys like Brandon Aubrey are hitting like 65 yarders and it's like nothing.
He's like, isn't he perfect from beyond 50? And it's like, it's not like it's 3 of 3. It's like 15 of 15 or something.
Yeah. It's nuts. So there's guys like that. And then meanwhile, like Justin Tucker is no longer good. You're like,
he's struggling.
What is going on? Like Tucker, I think Tucker is the only other kicker aside from Narvison, at least entering week three, that had missed multiple field goals and got to keep his job for whatever that's worth. So that's how good NFL kickers are getting right now. And then on top of that, you're getting about a field goal more a game, in part because kickers are getting better. So, you know, field goal range kind of widens. And then also because offenses are basically starting at the 30-yard line. So if you can kick from the logo and you're starting from the 30-yard line,
20
field goal range is 20 yards. Yeah. So I think a lot of stuff is changing with the kicking game, and who knows what they're going to end up changing the kickoff rules to if they do adjust.
That was the other one.
That they're going to adjust at some point. I don't know if it's going to be in season or it's going to be next off season or what.
I don't think it's
right now. Kickers are valuable. Kickers are definitely valuable.
I don't think it's going to be in season. I don't think they'll. I just think the competition of like, all right, for the first 5 weeks, we kept it one way, and like you didn't have to go against Keyshawn Nixon. You could have kicked it out of the end zone and got it at the 30, and now everyone's got to kick to Keyshawn Nixon. Like, I don't know. It doesn't feel like it feels like there could be a even if it's slight, some sort of competitive disadvantage there. So my guess is that, but it's not been great so far. And I think you were the one who nailed it right away of like changing from the 35 to the 30 was going to be everything, because it was going to be clear that the average was going to probably get out past the 30 on the kick returns. And if that was the case, even if it was like the 29, you're still probably better just kicking it out of the end zone, getting it to the 30 and not having to work on it as much, not having to worry about it. And it just makes more sense that way. The 35 is the game changer, and they ruined that. And now it just feels like we're still going with a completely unsatisfactory, boring play that just gets kicked out of the end zone every time.
Yeah, or I mean, worst case scenario, you can move the field goal, or not the field goal, but the kickoff spot up and just have it at the 20 or whatever, right? And just incentivize hard to return it, right? It's a weird situation, and it kind of varies team by team. I kind of thought Keyshawn was going to maybe get some return opportunities because Tennessee had kind of put the ball into play a little bit more than some of the other teams that
I think he thought so too, because did you see him react after that one kick? No. Oh, he was in the end zone and they put
opening kick?
The opening kick? No, it wasn't the opening one. It was like, I don't know, maybe after their, I think it was after their second touchdown, but maybe it was after their first touchdown, but they kicked it in through the end zone again. And he just went, you could tell he was like doing an F-bomb of just like going, cause he was frustrated. He's like, you can just tell he's like dying to get the only one he's got was the one he took 9 yards out in the opener when they were down by whatever and was not supposed to take it out in that scenario. You can tell he's frustrated.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's a huge part of his paycheck, right? Like you're paying him to be, I mean, I get that they obviously paid him to be a slot corner as well. And he's a starting slot and whatever, but like a ton of his value and the way that he wins a first team all pro is by getting returns, and he can't get returns. It's gotta be frustrating.
Yeah. And so much, again, so much varies team by team, and it depends on which guy you have back there. Right.
Yeah.
Like, I think I mentioned this to you last week. It was like 20 teams had like 20 balls in play that they had kicked in the first 2 weeks. And then the Saints put in 18, right? So it's like when you're looking at the kickoff touchback average, the averages don't matter. Tell me who's returning and who's kicking, and I could probably tell you if they're going to actually put it in play or not.
Yeah, right? For sure.
Because the average doesn't matter because Keyshawn's not getting a single touch. Right.
Packers put a couple in play this week, right? There was the one where they got the holding penalty, and I thought there was one other one too. So they did put a couple in play in this one, which was interesting.
And they've been solid when they did it. I thought that, you know, once Narvison hit that one in Brazil, once he hit that one in Brazil and it worked out for him, I was like, just do that every time. Right.
Like, yeah. Because that was the one that hit like at the 20 yard line, right? And like bounced. And it was like, if it goes a yard the other way, what do they get at? Like the 40, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so it was like, you could tell, I don't know if they just didn't have the appetite for that again, knowing that it was like 1 degree difference and it's at the 40, but yeah, that was like a perfect one, but yeah, I don't know. It needs some tweaks because right now it still is just, for the most part, boring as heck, and I don't think that's what anyone was hoping for. Justice, amazing, yes. per usual. Where can we find all of your awesome work?
AcmePackingCompany.com. Going to write about a little bit about Keyshawn, actually. What about him in the slot? He's leading the NFL in plays in the slot. So check that out for Tuesday. Got a bunch of stuff up there on, you know, we talked about Cooper and stuff like that
yep.
I thought was interesting this week. So yeah, keep an eye out. And then any Jordan Love updates, I swear to God, we will have them up there. Limited.
He's limited. I was going to say, you just put limited. You can write that story right now up until Sunday. He's going to be limited. He's going to be limited.
You're going to give him until game time. Limited.
Yeah. Questionable. And then, yeah. I'm assuming you think he plays this week.
Yeah, I think so.
Do we get a line yet?
Not that I've seen, but it could be out there. I would assume
Green Bay. I'm going to guess. Do you have a guess as to what it is?
It's in Green Bay.
It's in Green Bay.
Green Bay minus -2.
Green Bay minus -2.5 is what the line is currently set at. So
nailed it. I knew it was not going to be up to 3. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, that's fair. I think
that tells you Jordan's going to play?
At least their
estimation.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. That's Vikings are winning if Malik is
I don't know. He's the second best passer rating in all of the NFL, so you never quite know. Justice, thank you so much. I will talk to you again next week. I can't wait. Hopefully we're talking about a Packers victory over the Minnesota Vikings. Go follow him on Twitter at JUMOSQ. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for us. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.